Chapter 22. Bird Calls by Night. Lying face down on his blankets with his eyes closed, Matt luxuriated in the feel of Melindra's thumbs, kneading their way down his spine. There was nothing quite as good as a massage after a long day in the saddle. Well, some things were, but right then he was willing to settle for her thumbs. "You are well muscled for such a short man, Matrim Cawthon." He opened one eye and glanced back at her, kneeling astride his hips. She had built up the fire twice as high as needed, and sweat trickled down her body. Her fine golden hair, close cut except for that Aiel tail at the nape of her neck, clung to her scalp. "If I'm too short, you can always find somebody else." "You are not too short for my taste," she laughed, ruffling his hair. It was longer than hers. "And you are cute." "Relax. This does no good if you're tense." Grunting, he closed his eyes again. "Cute, light, and short." Only Aiel could call him short. In every other land he had been in, he was taller than most men, if not always by much. He could remember being tall. Taller than Rand, when he rode against Arthur Hawkwing. And a hand shorter than he was now when he fought beside Maesyn against the Elgari. He had spoken to Lan, claiming he had overheard some names. The warder said Maesyn had been a king of Aeron, one of the 10 nations. That much Matt already knew, some 400 or 500 years before the Trolloc Wars. Lan doubted that even the Brown Aja knew more. Much had been lost in the Trolloc Wars, and more in the War of the 100 Years. Those were the earliest and latest of the memories that had been planted in his skull. Nothing after Artur Peyndreg Tanrial, and nothing before Maesyn of Aeron. "Are you cold?" Melindra said incredulously. "You shivered." She scrambled off him, and he heard her add wood to the fire. There was enough scrub here for burning. She slapped his bottom hard as she climbed back on, murmuring, "Good muscle." "If you keep on like that," he muttered, "I'll think you mean to spit me for supper like a Trolloc." It was not that he did not enjoy Melindra, as long as she refrained from pointing out that she was taller anyway, but the situation made him uncomfortable. "No spits for you, Matrim Cawthon." Her thumbs dug hard into his shoulder. "That's it. Relax." He supposed that he would marry someday, settle down. That's what you did. A woman, a house, a family, shackled to one spot for the rest of his life. I never heard of a wife yet that liked her husband having a drink or a gamble. And there was what those folk on the other side of the doorframe Tirangrial had said, that he was fated to marry the daughter of the 9 moons. A man has to marry sooner or later, I suppose. But he certainly did not mean to take an Aiel wife. He wanted to dance with as many women as he could, while he could. "You are not made for spits, but for great honor, I think," Melindra said softly. "Sounds fine to me." Only now he could not get another woman to look at him. Not the maidens or the others. It was as if Melindra had hung a sign on him saying, "Owned by Melindra of the Jumai Shido." Well, she would not have to put that last bit on. Not here. Then again, who knew what an Aiel would do, especially a maiden of the spear? Women did not think the same as men, and Aiel women did not think like anybody else in the world.
"It is strange that you efface yourself so."
"Efface myself?" he mumbled. Her hands did feel good. Knots were coming out that he had not known were there.
"Oh."
He wondered if it had something to do with that necklace. Melindra seemed to set great store by it, or by receiving it, anyway. She never wore the thing, of course. Maidens did not.
But she carried it in her pouch and showed it to every woman who asked.
A lot of them seemed to.
"You put yourself in the shadow of Randall Thor."
"I am not in anybody's shadow," he said absently. It could not be the necklace. He had given jewelry to other women,
maidens and others. He liked giving things to pretty women, even if all he got in return was a smile. He never expected more. If a woman did not enjoy a kiss and a cuddle as much as he did, what was the point?
Of course there is honor of a sort in being in the shadow of the Kaer Karn. To be near the mighty, you must stand in their shade.
Shade, Matt agreed, not really hearing. Sometimes the women accepted, and sometimes not, but none had decided they owned him. That was what rankled, really. He was not about to be owned by any woman, however pretty she was, and no matter how good her hands were at loosening knotted muscles.
Your scars should be scars of honor, earned in your own name as a chief, not this.
One finger traced along the hanging scar on his neck.
Did you earn this serving the Kaer Karn?
Shrugging her hand away, he pushed up on his elbows and twisted to look at her.
Are you sure Daughter of the Nine Moons doesn't mean anything to you? I have told you it does not. Lie down.
If you are lying to me, I swear I'll welt your rump. Hands on hips, she looked down at him dangerously.
Do you think you can welt my rump, Matt Cawthon?
I'll give it my best try. She would probably put a spear through his ribs.
Do you swear you've never heard of the Daughter of the Nine Moons?
I never have, she said slowly.
Who is she? Or what? Lie down and let me...
A blackbird called, seemingly everywhere in the tent and outside as well. And a moment later, a redwing. Good Two Rivers birds. Rand had chosen his warnings from what he knew. Birds not found in the waste. Melindra was off him in an instant, wrapping her shufa around her head, veiling herself as she snatched up spears and bucklers. She darted from the tent like that.
Blood and bloody ashes, Matt muttered as he struggled into his breeches.
A redwing meant the south. He and Melindra had put up their tent to the south, with the Chareen, as far from Rand as they could get and stay in the encampment. He was not going outside in those thorn bushes naked, the way Melindra had. The blackbird meant north, where the Sharad were camped. They were coming from two sides at once. Stamping his feet in his boots as best he could in the low tent, he looked at the silver fox head lying beside his blankets. Shouts were rising outside, the clash of metal on metal. He had finally figured out that that medallion had somehow kept Moraine from healing him on her first try. So long as he had been touching it, her channeling had not affected him. He had never heard of Shadow Spawn able to channel, but there was always the Black Aja. So Rand said, and he believed it. And always the chance that one of the Forsaken had finally come after Rand. Pulling the leather thong over his head so the medallion hung on his chest, he snatched up his raven-marked spear and ducked out into the cold moonlight. He had no time to feel the icy chill. Before he was completely out of the tent, he almost lost his head to a scythe-curved Trolloc sword. The blade brushed his hair as he threw himself into a low dive, rolling to his feet with the spear ready. At first glance in the darkness, the Trolloc might have been a bulky man, though half again as tall as any Aielman, garbed all in black mail with spikes at elbows and shoulders, and a helmet with goat's horns attached. But these horns grew out of that two-human head, and below the eyes, a goat's muzzle thrust out. Snarling, the Trolloc lunged at him and howled in a harsh language never meant for a human tongue. Matt spun his spear like a quarterstaff, knocking the heavy curved blade to one side, and thrust his long spear point into the creature's middle, mail parting for that power-made steel as easily as the flesh beneath. The goat's-knotted Trolloc folded over with a harsh cry, and Matt pulled his weapon free, dodging aside as it fell. All around him, Aiel, some unclothed, or only half, but all black-veiled, fought Trollocs with tusked boar's snouts, or wolves' muzzles, or eagles' beaks, some with heads horned, or crested with feathers, wielding those oddly curved swords and spiked axes, hooked tridents and spears. Here and there, one used a huge bow to shoot barbed arrows the size of small spears. Men fought alongside the Trollocs, too, in rough coats, with swords, shouting desperately as they died among the thorn bushes.
Samael! Samael and the Golden Bees!
The Dark Friends were dying, most as soon as they engaged in Aiel, but the Trollocs died harder.
I am no bloody hero,
Matt shouted to no one in particular as he battled a Trolloc with a bear's muzzle and hairy ears, his third. The creature carried a long-handled axe with half a dozen sharp spikes and a flaring blade big enough to split a tree, throwing it about like a toy in those great hairy hands. It was being near Rand that got Matt into these things. All he wanted from life was some good wine, a game of dice, and a pretty girl or three.
I don't want to be mixed up in this.
Especially not if Samael was around.
Do you hear me?
The Trolloc went down with a ruined throat, and he found himself facing a Murdrol, just as it finished killing two Aiel who had come at it together. The half-man looked like a man, pasty pale, armored in black overlapping scales like a snake's. It moved like a snake, too, boneless and fluid and quick, night-black cloak hanging still, however it darted. And it had no eyes, just a dead-white sweep of skin where eyes should be. That eyeless gaze turned on him, and he shivered, fear oozing along his bones. The look of the eyeless is fear, they said in the Borderlands, where they should know. And even Aiel admitted that a Murdrol's stare sent chills through the marrow. That was the creature's first weapon. The half-man came at him in a flowing run. With a roar, Matt rushed to meet it, spear spinning like a quarterstaff, thrusting, ever moving. The thing carried a blade as dark as its cloak, a sword hammered at the forges of Thakandar, and if that cut him, he was as good as dead unless Moiraine appeared quickly with her healing. But there was only one sure way to take down a Fade. All-out attack. You had to overwhelm it before it overwhelmed you. And a thought for defense could be a good way to die. He could not even spare a glance for the battle raging around him in the night. The Murdrol's blade flickered like a serpent's tongue, darted like black lightning, but to counter Matt's attack. When raven-marked power-wrought steel met Thakandar-made metal, blue light flashed around them, a crackle of sheet lightning. Suddenly Matt's slashing attack struck flesh. Black sword and pale hand flew away, and the reverse stroke sliced open the Murdrol's throat, but Matt did not stop. Thrust through the heart, cut to one hamstring, then the other, all in rapid succession. Only then did he step away from the thing still thrashing on the ground, flailing about with its good hand and severed stump, wounds spilling inky blood. Half-men took a long time to admit that they were dead. They did not die completely, except with a setting sun. Looking around, Matt realized that the attack was over. Whatever Dark Friends or Trollocs were not dead had fled. At least he saw none standing except Aiel. Some of them were down, too. He plucked a kerchief from the neck of a Dark Friend corpse to wipe the Murdrol's black blood from his spear point. It would etch the metal if left too long. This night assault made no sense. By the bodies he could see in the moonlight, Trolloc and human, none had made it much past the first line of tents, and without far greater numbers, they could not have hoped for more.
What was that you called out? Karai something? The old tongue?
He turned to look at Melindra. She had unveiled, but she still wore not a stitch more than her shufa. There were other maidens about, and men, wearing as little and showing as little concern, though most did seem to be heading back to their tents without lingering. They had no modesty. That was it. No modesty at all. She did not even seem to feel the cold, though her breath made wisps of mist. He was as sweaty as she, and freezing now that he had no fight for his life to occupy his mind.
Something I heard once, he told her. I like the sound of it.
Karai an Kaldazar. For the honor of the Red Eagle. The battle cry of Manetherin. Most of his memories were from Manetherin, some of those he had before the twisted doorway. Moiraine said it was the old blood coming out, just as long as it did not come out of his veins. She put an arm around his shoulders as he started back toward their tent.
I saw you with the Night Runner, Matt Cawthon.
That was one of the Aiel names for Murdral.
You are as tall as a man needs to be.
Grinning, he slipped his arm around her waist, but he could not get the attack out of his head. He wanted to. His thoughts were too snarled in his borrowed memories. But he could not. Why had anyone launched such a hopeless assault? No one but a fool attacked overwhelming force without a reason. That was the thought he could not pry out of his head. No one attacked without a reason. The bird calls pulled Rand awake immediately, and he seized Sayadin as he tossed the blankets aside and ran out, coatless, in his stocking feet. The night was cold and moonlit, faint sounds of battle drifting up from the hills below the pass. Around him, Aiel stirred like scurrying ants, rushing into the night to where an attack might come here in the pass. The wards would signal again. Shadowspawn in the pass would cause a Winterfinch to call, until he unraveled them in the morning. But there was no point in taking foolish chances. Soon the pass was still again. The Gaishine in their tents, forbidden weapons even now. The other Aiel, off at the places that might need defending. Even Adeline and the other maidens had gone, as if they knew he would have held them back if they waited. He could hear a few mutters from the wagons near the town walls, but neither the drivers nor Kadir showed themselves. He did not expect them to. The faint sounds of battle, men shouting, screaming, dying, came from two directions. Both below, well away from him. People were out around the Wise One's tents, too, staring toward the fighting, it seemed. An attack down there made no sense. It was not the Miagoma, not unless Timolin had taken Shadowspawn into his clan, and that was as likely as White Cloaks recruiting Trollocs. He turned back toward his tent, and even enclosed in the void he gave a start. Avienda had come out into the moonlight, a blanket wrapped around her. Just beyond her stood a tall man shrouded in a dark cloak. Moon shadows drifted over a gaunt face that was too pale, with eyes too large. A crooning rose, and the cloak opened into wide, leathery wings like those of a bat. Moving as in a dream, Avienda drifted toward the waiting embrace. Rand channeled, and finger-thin balefire burned past her, an arrow of solid light to take the Drakkar in the head. The effect of that narrower stream was slower, but no less sure than with the Darkhounds. The creature's colors reversed, black to white, white to black, and it became sparkling motes that melted in air. Avienda shook herself as the crooning ended, stared at the last particles as they vanished, and turned to Rand, gathering the blanket closer. Her hand came up, and a stream of fire as thick as his head roared toward him. Startled, even inside the emptiness, never thinking of the power, he threw himself to the ground beneath the billowing flames. They died in an instant. "What are you doing?" he barked, so angry, so shocked, that the void cracked and Sayadin vanished from him. He scrambled to his feet, stalking toward her. "This tops any ingratitude I ever heard of." He was going to shake her until her teeth rattled. "I just saved your life, in case you failed to notice. And if I offended some bloody Aiel custom, I don't give a—" "The next time," she snapped back, "I will leave the great Ka Karn to deal with matters by himself." Awkwardly clutching the blanket close, she ducked stiff-backed into the tent. For the first time, he looked behind him. At another Drakkar, crumpled on the ground in flames. He had been so angry that he had not heard the crackling and popping as it burned, had not smelled the odor of burning grease. He had not even sensed the evil of it. A Drakkar killed first by sucking the soul away and then life. It had to be close, touching, but this one lay no more than 2 paces from where he had been standing. He was not certain how effective a Drakkar's crooning embrace was against someone filled with Sayadin, but he was glad he had not found out. Drawing a deep breath, he knelt beside the tent flap. "Avienda?" He could not go in. A lamp was lit in there, and she could be sitting there, naked for all he knew, mentally ripping him up and down the way he deserved. "Avienda, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I was a fool to speak as I did without asking why. I should know that you wouldn't harm me, and I'm a fool, he finished weakly.
A great deal you know, Randall Thor, came a muffled reply.
You are a fool.
How did Aiel apologize? He had never asked her that. Considering Jiato, teaching men to sing, and wedding customs, he did not think he would.
Yes, I am. And I apologize.
There was no answer this time.
Are you in your blankets?
Silence. Muttering to himself, he stood, working his stockinged toes on the icy ground. He was going to have to remain out here until he was sure she was decently covered, without boots or coat. He seized hold of Sidon, taint and all, just to be distanced from the bone-grinding cold inside the void. The three wise one dreamwalkers came running, of course, and Egwene, all staring at the burning Drakkar as they skirted it, drawing their shawls around them with almost the same motion.
Only one, Amis said. I thank the light, but I am surprised.
There were two, Rand told her. I destroyed the other.
Why should he be hesitant just because Moiraine had warned him against balefire?
It was a weapon like any other.
If Avienda had not killed this one, it might have gotten me.
The feel of her channeling drew us, Egwene said, looking him up and down.
At first he thought she was checking for injuries, but she paid special attention to his stocking feet, then glanced at the tent, where a crack in the tent flap showed lamplight.
You've upset her again, haven't you? She saved your life and you...
Men!
With a disgusted shake of her head, she brushed past him and into the tent. He heard faint voices, but could not make out what was being said. Malaine gave a hitch to her shawl.
If you do not need us, then we must see what is happening below.
She hurried off without waiting for the other two. Bear cackled as she and Amis followed.
A wager on who she will check on first. My amethyst necklace that you like so much against that sapphire bracelet of yours?
Done. I choose Dorinda.
The elder wise one cackled again.
Her eyes are still full of bale. A first sister is a first sister, but a new husband.
They moved down out of earshot, and he bent toward the tent flap. He could still not hear what they were saying, not unless he stuck his ear to the crack, and he was not about to do that. Surely Avienda had covered herself with Egwene in there. Then again, the way Egwene had taken to Aiel ways, it was just as likely she had peeled out of her clothes instead. The soft sound of slippers announced Moiraine and Lan, and Rand straightened. Though he could hear both of them breathing, the warder's steps still made barely an audible noise. Moiraine's hair hung about her face, and she held a dark robe around her, the silk shining with the moon. Lan was fully dressed, booted and armed, wrapped in that cloak that made him part of the night. Of course. The clamor of fighting was dying down in the hills below.
I'm surprised you are not here sooner, Moiraine.
His voice sounded cold, but better his voice than him. He held on to Sidon, fought it, and the night's icy chill remained something far off. He was aware of it, aware of each hair on his arms stirring with cold beneath his shirt sleeves, but it did not touch him.
You usually come looking for me as soon as you sense trouble.
I have never explained all that I do, or do not do.
Her voice was as coolly mysterious as it had ever been, yet even in the moonlight Rand was certain that she was blushing. Lan looked troubled, though with him it was difficult to tell.
I cannot hold your hand forever. Eventually you must walk alone.
I did that tonight, didn't I?
Embarrassment slid across the void. That sounded as though he had done everything himself, and he added,
Avienda all but took one off my back.
The flames in the Drakkar were burning low.
As well she was here, then,
Moiraine said calmly.
You did not need me.
She had not been afraid, of that he was sure. He had seen her rush into the midst of Shadowspawn, wielding the power as skillfully as Lan did his sword. Seen it too often to believe fear in her.
So why had she not come when she sensed the Drakkar?
She could have, and Lan as well. That was one of the gifts a warder received from the bond between him and an Aes Sedai.
He could make her tell, catch her between her oath to him and her inability to lie straight out.
No, he could not. Or would not. He would not do that to someone who was trying to help him.
At least now we know what the attack below was about, he said. To make me think something important was happening there, while the Drakkar slipped in on me. They tried that at Cold Rock's hold, and it did not work there either. Only maybe it almost had, this time. If that had been the intent. You would think they would try something different. Culloden ahead of him, the Forsaken everywhere, it seemed. Why could he not face one enemy at a time?
Do not make the mistake of thinking the Forsaken simple, Moraine said. That could easily be fatal.
She shifted her robe as though wishing it were thicker.
The hour is late. If you have no further need of me...
Aiel began to drift back as she and the warder left.
Some exclaimed over the Drakkar and roused some of the Gaishine to drag it away, but most simply looked at it before going to their tents. They seemed to expect such things of him now. When Adelin and the maidens appeared, their soft-booted feet dragged. They stared at the Drakkar, being hauled away by white-robed men, and exchanged long looks before approaching Rand.
There was nothing here, Adelin said slowly. The attack was all below. Dark friends and Trollocs.
Shouting Samael and the Golden Bees, I heard, added another.
With her head wrapped in a shufa, Rand could not make out who she was. She sounded young. Some of the maidens were not more than 16. Taking a deep breath, Adelin held out one of her spears, horizontally in front of him, rock steady. The others did the same, one spear each.
I failed, Adelin said. We should have been here when the Drakkar came. Instead, we ran like children to dance the spears.
What am I supposed to do with those? Rand asked, and Adelin replied without hesitation.
Whatever you wish, Kaer Karn. We stand ready and will not resist.
Rand shook his head. Bloody Aiel and their bloody Geato.
You take those and go back to guarding my tent.
Well, go!
Looks passed between them before they began to obey, as reluctantly as they had approached him in the first place.
And one of you tell Avienda that I will be coming in when I return, he added.
He was not going to spend the entire night outside, wondering whether it was safe. He stalked away, the stony ground hard under his feet.
Asmodian's tent was not very far from his. There had not been a sound out of it.
He whipped open the flap and ducked in. Asmodian was sitting in the dark, chewing his lip. He flinched when Rand appeared, and gave him no chance to speak.
You did not expect me to take a hand, did you? I felt the Drakkar, but you could deal with those. You did.
I have never liked Drakkar. We should never have made them. They have fewer brains than a Trolloc. Give them an order, and they still sometimes kill whatever is closest. If I had come out, if I had done something, what if someone noticed? What if they realized it could not be you channeling?
Well for you that you didn't, Rand cut him off, sitting cross-legged in the dark. If I had felt you full of Sidene out there tonight, I might have killed you.
The other man's laugh was shaky.
I thought of that, too.
It was Samael who sent the attack tonight. The Trollocs and Dark Friends, anyway.
It is not like Samael to throw men away, Asmodian said slowly. But he'll see 10,000 dead, or 10 times that, if it gains him what he thinks is worth the cost. Maybe one of the others wants you to think it was him. Even if the Aiel took prisoners, Trollocs do not think of much besides killing, and Dark Friends believe what they are told.
It was him. He tried to bait me into attacking him once in the same way at Sarendahar.
Oh, light.
The thought drifted across the surface of the void.
I said me.
He did not know where Sarendahar had been, or anything but what he had said. The words had just come out. After a long silence, Asmodian said quietly,
"I never knew that.
What I want to know is, why?" Rand chose his words carefully, hoping that they were all his. He remembered Samael's face, a man, not mine, not my memory, a compact man with a short yellow beard. Asmodian had described all the Forsaken, but he knew this image was not made from that description. Samael had always wanted to be taller, and resented it that the power could not make him so. Asmodian had never told him that. "From what you've told me, he is not likely to want to face me unless he is sure of victory, and maybe not then. You said he'd likely leave me to the Dark One if he could. So why is he sure he'll win now if I decide to go after him?" They discussed it in the dark for hours without coming to any conclusion. Asmodian held to the opinion that it had been one of the others hoping to send Rand against Samael, and thus get rid of one or both. At least Asmodian said that he did. Rand could feel the man's dark eyes on him, wondering. That slip had been too big to cover. When he finally returned to his own tent, Adolin and the dozen maidens all sprang to their feet, all of them at once telling him that Egwene was gone and Davienda long asleep, that she was angry with him. They both were. They gave so many different pieces of advice on handling the two women's anger, all at the same time, that he could understand none of it. Finally, they fell silent, looks passing between them, and Adolin spoke alone.
"We must speak of tonight, of what we did, and what we failed to do.
It was nothing," he told her. "And if it was something, it's forgiven and forgotten. I would like to have a few hours' sleep for once. If you want to discuss it, go talk to Amis or Bear. I am sure they'll understand what you're after more than I do." That shut them up, surprisingly, and let him get inside. Avienda was in her blankets, with one slim, bare leg sticking out. He tried not to look at it or her. She had left a lamp lit. He climbed into his own blankets gratefully and channeled the lamp out before releasing Saidin. This time he dreamed of Avienda hurling fire, only she was not hurling it at a Drakkar, and Samael was sitting at her side, laughing.